98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit, is what I hear every single day. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Dan Bickley. Fitz Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
Good morning and welcome.
I love this show.
Me too.
It's the greatest radio show that's ever existed.
It really, really is.
In case you needed a refresher for the new version of the prolonged open.
Let's cut the crap, Mr. Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world. Good morning, Valley sports fans. Welcome. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, Jarrett Carlin, who still hasn't gotten a haircut, but we're not going to spend any time talking about that today.
Just, I think,
feeding the beast.
Daily update to start things off.
Yeah,
is probably
just a daily
adequate.
Update. Yeah. We've got a national champion.
I got an idea, actually.
You do?
Remember a few years back, the production element we had?
Oh. Did the Diamondbacks go over 500?
Oh, right. No.
This is an excellent idea.
Did Jarrett get a haircut?
No.
No.
And then you're done with it.
Yeah, that's
right?
It.
Yeah, okay. I like that.
No elaboration, no explanation.
Well, yeah, listen. You
get it out there.
You were not here yesterday when Jarrett said, well, it might not be this week because I've got relatives coming in town, and then next week a friend's coming in town, and I want to show off my hair to him. Uh-huh. Yeah. So this is the game we're playing now.
Oh, that's funny.
You know, it's
I want to give everybody an opportunity to experience
like,
it.
It's like,
and now it's time for Did the D-backs get to 500? No.
No.
We could actually use that element
I guess we could
this year, too.
Yeah, but you're right.
I mean, not for a couple of days, because, you know.
Well,
two games under.
I don't think we're going to see 500 the rest of the season, but that's
just
me.
Oh, no.
But that's just me. That's just me. I'm Mr. Optimist, you know? You know what I mean? Well, we get a national champion in college basketball. Not
yes,
exactly who we thought it was going to be.
Wow.
Right?
What a shellacking.
And so, congratulations to whoever won the Bracket Bucks, Bracket Boss
Bracket,
Tournament.
Bracket Bucks.
Bracket Bucks Tournament.
For the on-air host, of course, it was Mr. BPI.
Yeah. Ron
Wolfley.
You bet
your sweet bippy.
Yeah, you're right. Ron Wolfley, who still is bragging, even though he's using somebody else's picks.
True.
And Gambo finished in last place.
And Burnsy second to last.
Burnsy second to last.
In a year, in a normal year where there would be consequences that we've had to pay before.
Yeah.
Oh,
they
would have consequences.
Yeah,
but
listen.
No, they skate.
It was
scot-free.
On Sunday, the 11-year-old monster said to me, Dad, do you remember when you had to sing Barbie Girl on stage? I said, shut up, Cole.
You're grounded.
You're grounded. And yes, I do remember. Yeah, I think it's inherent on us now that we've got to be the sandpaper. We've got to rub that in, right?
Yeah. It's our only recourse at this point. We've
totally
had to pay penalties before.
I know.
Some kindler, gentler March Madness tournament has just got
for the birds.
Yeah, it's for the birds.
Sandpaper doesn't rub things in, though. It smooths them.
Oh, thank you for that. That was wonderful.
Sandpaper smooths things over.
Hi, I'm Professor Carlin. I'll be your professor for Broadcasting 101.
Ask whatever it is that sandpaper is grading on if it's an enjoyable process making things smoother.
Yeah.
It's not. It's not. All right, Carlin, start the program.
The Splash. Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
And we start Splash for Tuesday, April 6th. Stop me if you've heard this one before. The Phoenix Suns took on a bad and shorthanded opponent last night, struggled at times, found a way to win. This time it was against the Houston Rockets, owners of the second worst record in basketball. And they were missing John Wall, Daniel House, Eric Gordon, David Nwaba. Suns led by as many as 15, saw a 13-point lead in the late third, early fourth quarter evaporate in a span of 2 minutes and 9 seconds. But Devin Booker closed the game strong, scoring 18 fourth-quarter points. Suns hang on for a 133-130 win. Booker outstanding. DeAndre Ayton tied a season high with 27 points, added 13 rebounds for Phoenix, who are now 35-13 and hosting first place Utah tomorrow night. First time in Devin Booker's career he's played on a 35-win team.
Oh, how about that? Yeah, I don't know what to make of last night's game. I'm ready just kind of to turn the page on it and get to the real stuff later this week. Kind of alarming that that team was in that game late, but then again, it was kind of reassuring that Devin Booker had a fourth quarter like we've been wanting to have. So I guess I'm going to be all over the map with last night's game.
That's all right. It makes for a good conversation.
I agree.
Speaking of the Jazz, they lost to Dallas last night, 111-103, snapping their nine-game winning streak. Utah still 38-12, 2.5 games ahead of the Suns, heading into Wednesday night's anticipated matchup. This is going to be fun. Tomorrow night at Phoenix Suns Arena is going to be a fun evening. All the excitement for this team, mm-hmm. I think there's been a little bit of energy and electricity, and obviously with 15,000 fans missing from the building, mm-hmm. that's to be expected, but I think a lot of that energy is going to get cranked up tomorrow.
Yeah, I hope so. I think this is going to be a very interesting stretch of basketball, Vinny. When you take a look at it, they're going to be playing four games a week until the end of the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of basketball. And I've got my fingers crossed because I think there's going to be a lot of injuries suffered in these next 4 weeks. There's a lot of high-stakes basketball. Keep your fingers crossed, what I'm trying to say.
Good advice. Two best teams in college basketball tangled for the title last night. And it wasn't much of a game. Baylor jumped out to a quick 9-0 lead, never looked back. They crushed Gonzaga 86-70 for their first ever national championship. The loss also ended Gonzaga's perfect season. And the 76 Indiana Hoosiers remain the last college basketball team to run the table through the tournament undefeated. Jared Butler, the tournament's most outstanding player, led the Bears with 22 points. I was admittedly focused on Suns Rockets last night.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I felt comfortable with the Suns being victorious, which was when the buzzer sounded, and flipped it over, that game was over.
Yeah.
And it never got close.
The game was over in the first 2 minutes of the game. Baylor just came out and took control of that thing right from the start. And it looked to me like Gonzaga knew they were not up to par of Baylor's basketball team. Baylor is terrific.
Yeah, they only lost two games all year themselves.
Yeah.
That's a good basketball team. Historically now, there's been 5 championship game matchups that have pitted the number one versus the number two teams in the AP preseason poll.
All right.
And number two is 5-0.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
You wouldn't expect that, would you?
No, not at all.
Wow.
The Coyotes are becoming the hat trick kings of the NHL. Last night it was Michael Bunting playing in just his 9th NHL game, scoring 3 times, powering the Yotes to a 5-2 win over the Kings at Staples Center. Bunting joins Derek Brassard, Phil Kessel, and Jacob Chychrun as Coyotes players who have notched hat tricks, not just this year, but in the last 9 games. More importantly, they've won 6 of their last 7. They've built a nice 5-point cushion in 4th place in the NHL Honda West Division over San Jose and St. Louis. Coyotes and Kings face off again tomorrow night before Rick Tocchet's team moves on to play back-to-back games against Vegas.
Yeah, and props to the Coyotes. They're taking this season in a direction I did not think they were going to do, so props to them.
Yeah, we didn't expect much from them.
Didn't.
And even though they still are in fourth place, they're in position for a playoff spot right now. I think they've overachieved to this point, considering, mm-hmm. again, the goalie injuries that continue to plague this team. They've navigated through it quite nicely.
No doubt.
D-backs are back at it after their first off day of 2021. They open a 3-game series against the Colorado Rockies at Coors Field in Denver. Both teams 1-3 after the opening weekend. It's right-hander Luke Weaver making his season debut against Herman Marquez. First pitch, 5:40. Pre-game coverage starts at 5 over on ESPN, 6:20 a.m. It was nice to get a win before they left San Diego, but man, the first 3 games of that series were not very encouraging.
No, they really, really weren't. And so after, why did they need a day off on Monday? It's really bizarre, 4 games into the season, but whatever.
Look, there was 14 teams off on Friday, the second game of the season. I don't understand.
Bizarre.
It. Yeah. Speaking of Coors Field, that will be the new home of the 2021 Major League Baseball All-Star Game. It'll be relocated there after baseball pulled the game from Truist Park in Atlanta following some new voting measures signed into law in Georgia. So that's a thing now. Details on new Cardinals center Rodney Hudson's newly reworked contract surfaced today from NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. When he was traded, according to Rappaport, when he was traded from the Raiders to the Cardinals, Hudson received an extension. It's complicated, but now it's a three-year, $30 million new contract. He had $9.9 million on the books. Now adds 2 years and $20.1 million with $16 million in total guarantees, and it includes two voidable years for cap purposes. So some creative bookkeeping by Steve Keim in the front office.
Yeah, and you pointed out that the Cardinals have a lot of money still sitting there.
A good amount, $13 million.
Yeah, and that's not just for a rookie pool.
Mm-hmm.
So,
ASU's Marcus Bagley, the latest Sun Devil to declare for the NBA draft. He did so today. Bagley had an injury-plagued season in Tempe, managing to play in just 12 games. He averaged 10.8 points and a team-leading 6.2 rebounds per contest. He did tell ESPN he's keeping his options open, though, and has not yet hired an agent.
Okay.
One and dones, man, when they work out, they're great. When they don't work out so great, it's kind of...
It's very unfulfilling when they don't work out so well, isn't it?
Yeah. Bobby Hurley did post a nice message about Marcus Bagley about how proud he is of him, and becomes the second freshman now to declare for the NBA draft. There you go. There's your splash for Tuesday, April 6th. Coming up, what words would you describe the Suns' win as last night? We'll share some of the ones we came up with next. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Marotta.
Bickley and Marotta.
Three-point game. Jayshon Tate to inbound. Underneath the basket. Lobs a long pass. Deflected by Booker. And it taken by Bridges. That'll do it. The Suns win. 133-130. The final from Houston. They knock off the Rockets. Their sixth straight win. And they are now 35-14 on the season.
John Bloom with the final call. Suns win again. 133-130. It was... I don't know if this is a harsh word, but I'm going to use it. It was a formulaic win from what we've seen from the Suns lately. Uh-huh. In most cases, not all. Obviously, what they did to Oklahoma City last Friday night was a dismantling early on, outscoring them by 30 points in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. But this was the latest in a good basketball team, and nobody's refuting that, in the Phoenix Suns, one of the best teams in the NBA, record-wise and beyond, playing down to their competition. A team in Houston that has the second-worst record in basketball, a team that quite recently suffered a 20-game losing streak, and a team, quite honestly, I don't want to put this all on the Suns, because I think Houston, that group of Rockets, even though they were shorthanded, they played really hard and about as well as they could play, the way they shot the three. So again, you move on, you take the win, and you cross your fingers that this is not emblematic of some problems that the Suns will have moving forward against better teams.
Yeah, listen, I agree pretty much with everything you said. This was a Rockets team that you wouldn't think would be able to score 130 points on the Phoenix Suns' vaunted defense. Not when they were featuring Kelly Olynyk, Avery Bradley, and DJ Augustin, and everybody else was... It was like a G League team, and yet, that was the scouting report of the Rockets, that ever since they have made moves, this group of players that they have, they're playing hard for this head coach, and they've lost 26 of 28 games, so they're not a good team even when healthy. And last night they weren't healthy, and yet they scored 130 on the Suns. That to me, I have a hard time wrapping my head around that. I really do. And it's
playing hard or not, they shouldn't have the talent even playing hard to do that.
To score 130, I get maybe not being blown out, but 130 points. The Suns pride themselves on mostly playing really attentive, good defense. And that might have been an issue last night. I guess if you want to just look at the positives, there was a time when Devin Booker looked like he was struggling in this closer's role, that it wasn't really... It didn't look like, it didn't look Jordan-esque, it didn't look Kobe-esque, it looked kind of clunky. Mm-hmm. Last night looked good.
Yeah, he went back into the game in the fourth quarter with 7:22 to go, and it was after a stretch where, I mean, the way that lead evaporated as quickly as it did, they were up 13, it was gone 2:09, where they lost the lead, and then Booker came in and obviously just took over the game. Here's Devin Booker last night talking about his mindset when he went back into the game into the fourth quarter.
Just taking what the defense gave me. I think Chris did a good job of
you know, opening things up in transition. So I got a couple quick, easy threes. And then just trying to win the game. You know, I always say take what the defense gives me. And that was the goal tonight. But, you know, that was a hard-fighting team over there. They fought beginning to end. You know, I think a couple times we had opportunity to put them away, but they didn't go anywhere. So, you know, we wanted to get this one better.
Yeah, here's head coach Monty Williams talking about the fourth quarter for the Suns.
They're playing much better. I don't think they get enough credit. The coach has got some players that play the way he wants to play. You know, I can sit here and talk about some of the mistakes that we made in execution and turning the ball over in key moments. But I thought Book had big-time poise tonight, whether it was in isolation or knocking down threes. Like, those wasn't just the shot. It was the way he got to his spot or came off of screens to get a shot. And that really helped us. Our second unit was a bit off tonight, and that happens. And our starters came back in and closed it out. And that's, you know, that's how it is sometimes. You got to win a game. It wasn't as pretty as you would like it to be, but at the end of the day, we beat a team that's playing a lot better on the road, and it's a big win for us.
I agree with that, but that terminology keeps coming up, Bick, and that is it's not as pretty as we'd like it to be. And again, you don't get style points, you don't get extra points, you don't get extra wins in the standings for beating a team in a nice fashion. The Suns have become adept at winning ugly games, but the concern is that these ugly wins are coming against some of the worst teams in the NBA. And some ugly losses are coming against some bad teams.
Yeah, too. It's really, really weird. And maybe the corollary to that, as I said yesterday, is that means that they're going to get really especially up and be especially good and sharp against the good teams. Some teams are built like that. You wouldn't expect it for a team that hadn't been in the playoffs for 10 years, but that isn't the story of everybody on the Suns. You know, Jay Crowder, Chris Paul, that what do they know of the last 10 years that we've, you know, the drought that we've had here? So I think when you look at this, it's to me, this is really just sort of like a page turner kind of game in terms of you got the win, which certainly better than the alternative. And it's just an appetizer for what people really want to see. And that is, how this team right now, here and now, is going to look against a couple of really good teams in back-to-back games. I'm excited for it. I think you're right. I think there's going to be a special kind of energy around these games now, because this feels like the gauntlet is beginning for the basketball team.
Yeah, I agree. Day off today, Utah tomorrow, then in L.A. On Thursday night against the Clippers, back-to-back. Devin Booker talked about the challenges that are ahead in that stretch.
You know, we want to win every game when we go out there. So, you know, obviously, you know, these are two top teams in the West that, you know, I'm sure that we'll see down the line at some point maybe. So, you know, every game counts. You know, I know we're going to be locked in. We're going to be ready, so. You know, it's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. And you're getting a team, and I go back to the conversation we had with Amino Hassan last week, and he brought up a very valid point on the teams at the top of the conference right now. Utah and Phoenix have been two of the more consistently healthy teams. You know, what you said in the splash, you probably made some people cringe, but that's a reality of it. You know, everything is kind of pushed together with this second half of the season. They're going into a very, very important stretch of basketball in April. There are high leverage games, and the Suns players, I don't want to diminish anybody's role on this team, but the Suns players that have missed extended time this year, they haven't been Chris Paul. They haven't been Devin Booker. They haven't been DeAndre Ayton or Mikal Bridges or Jay Crowder, who did miss some time, but they've been able to remain, knock on wood, very healthy.
They have.
The Utah Jazz have as well. That's going to be a factor down the stretch, not only for these two teams, but I mean, you want to talk about the luck that like the team like the Brooklyn Nets are having.
Yeah.
James Harden comes back, plays 4 minutes last night against the Knicks, and he's out again.
Yeah.
They can't get their big three on the floor together.
I know. How about it's
the
crazy, Lakers? Isn't it?
Yeah, the Lakers, too.
Andre Drummond, he plays like 3 minutes.
Yeah, and gets his toe stepped on.
Yeah, right. So I think I'm crossing my fingers that this is the year we get karmic payback. That this is the year we actually get luck on our side.
Oh, I hope so.
That's the way I'm going to look at it, because I don't want to go into this, a playoff run, thinking, okay, the shoe's about to drop. What fate is going to befall us now? You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to be waiting, you know, for something bad to happen, and then when something happens, oh, see, we're cursed. We need to change our mindset here.
Yes.
That's what it's all about.
That's 90% of the battle.
Something like that.
Yeah. We'll just go with it. Don't question those statistics, please. Uh-huh, right, I did a lot of research on those. Starting next Monday, we're giving you the chance every weekday to win $500. Text BONUS to 620-620 to register and listen for your name at 7:35 a.m., 1:35 p.m. with us, 3:35 p.m. for your chance at the Arizona Sports Signing Bonus. Once again, text BONUS to 620-620. Did you hear me? $500 on the line. Coming up next, it's a question that was raised getting ready for the baseball season, and apparently it's a question that's not going away, at least anytime soon. The future of Torrey Lovello in Arizona. Well, the owner of the Diamondbacks had some interesting comments on it. We'll get into that next. Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
No, it's nothing that is going to distract me. You know, I've been in baseball my whole life, and every year that I've worked, with the exception of the past couple, I've worked year to year with contracts. So I'm very well prepared to be able to block out the black noise and the distraction. And for the way I look at it, my parents taught me to honor things, and in this case, I'm going to honor this contract and work my butt off. And eliminate all the distractions, because that's what my team wants me to do, and that's what I need to do for the team as well.
Torrey Lovello, manager of the Diamondbacks. That back from February 23rd, visit with Burns and Gamble, when the topic of his contract status came up. It's rare that you see a major league manager managing in the last year of a contract. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not unheard of, but it's also not commonplace, especially when you consider all the glowing things that were said following that particular interview, mm-hmm. from front office members, Mike Hazen, Derek Hall, and the like, about how much, you know, they love Torrey Lovello and the job that he's done. But the fact remains that here we are in early April, one series, four games out of 162 out of the way, and that's still the case. And the reason why we're revisiting this is because Ken Kendrick, the managing general partner of the Arizona Diamondbacks, visited with Burns and Gambo yesterday. And it was a wide-ranging interview, and that was one of the things that came up, was Torrey Lovello and his contract status. Here was Ken Kendrick about that very fact, about his manager being in a contract.
One, I'm a big Torrey Lovello fan, so let me get that said. Separately, you know, if you think of players, and I think you guys observe this, whether it be baseball or other sports, players on their last year of contracts probably go all out to really give everything they have to the job, because the next contract is sitting out there potentially available. That might happen with a manager. I think he's going to give it all he has no matter what. But, you know, we're very comfortable with what he's done. He's very comfortable, you know, in the setting that he's in. And so if I were making a prediction, and I sometimes do and try not to make too many, because the more predictions you make, the more likely you're going to be wrong on occasion. But I would predict he'll be right back where he is in that dugout running the team next year.
All right, Bick, I will defer to you, and I will just ask this question to start off this part of the show.
Yeah.
There was a lot said there. What do you take away from that?
Weirdness is what I take away from that. Because why is an owner making predictions on the fate of a job that he ultimately holds control over?
Uh-huh.
That, to me, is a little bit odd. He made it also clear that this is going to be a Mike Hazen decision, and that he's going to spin off of that. And that I respect. If Ken Kendrick is saying, this is really not my call, this is the GM's call, okay, I kind of respect that. Because one of my working theories was, if Mike Hazen and Derek Hall love Mike Hazen, why are they doing this to him? And one of the options was because the owner doesn't think the same about him. Well, we just found out the owner does.
Yeah. We're very comfortable with what he's done. Mm-hmm. I'll ask this question. This roster would it be more successful? Would they win more games with another manager?
Well,
look,
heck no.
I know there's people in our audience that are listening right now that aren't huge Torrey Lovello fans. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it comes down to just game day decisions, things that happen in the heat of the battle of a baseball game where he gets criticized for a lot of stuff. And sometimes about, the pressure that he put on the team last year, he got some criticism for that. But I don't think anybody can really say, all right, another manager with this same group of players and the same group of injuries that they have right now would win more games. So I agree with you. If you're comfortable, and last year you are dealing with a manager who did fall on the sword completely for what happened last year.
Sure did.
And he talked about himself being responsible for putting more pressure. I think not having a contract puts more pressure on the manager than anything else. And Torrey Lovello can deny it, but it's got to creep into some level.
Listen, and this is, yes, it has to. Because what is going to happen when they begin mounting losses, then you know what that churn looks like. You know what it sounds like. And it's going to lead to a lot of speculation about Torrey Lovello. And speculation that needn't happen if they gave him a contract extension. Are they waiting to see something from him? Are they looking to see a certain number in terms of wins?
But if Kendrick's saying that we expect him to be back next year anyway, are they also saying that, well, we don't really have any expectations for this year, so it doesn't really matter what happens this year?
Right. So then why wouldn't you empower the manager at that point in time?
A great question.
I've covered baseball teams with lame duck managers before, and I know what players talk about. I've heard it. And it's when the season goes south, a manager without years on his deal loses authority. Because the players know, the big bosses don't dig him that much, or he'd be signed. We don't need to listen to him.
About a player in a contract year and a manager in a contract year, I think it's apples and oranges.
Yeah, that's...
So if a player goes out and hits 45 home runs, obviously that's going to be more of a financial boon to the player than it would be for a manager to get picked up for another contract.
But is that even really a thing in baseball? I know it's a thing in football and basketball, effort-driven sports, but in baseball, is that really a thing?
Are you saying players don't try?
Well, no, I'm just saying that it's a different kind of game. You can't effectively increase your energy and your enthusiasm and your aggressiveness.
You can increase your production.
Yeah.
And that's the key.
Okay.
I mean, they're still on the arbitration system, too.
And so what is this saying? Is this saying that to come out and say we might get that from the manager, he might give us his all.
Yeah.
Doesn't that kind of imply that he wasn't?
Well, he did say, I think he's going to give us his all regardless.
He did?
Yeah.
Yeah, the words don't match the actions and when it comes to Torrey Lovello.
And it's also the giving it your all as Torrey Lovello sometimes doesn't translate to like a fan's perspective, because he's not the type of manager that'll go on a rant post game. He's not the type of manager that'll turn over a table in the locker room.
No, he's not.
He's not the type of manager even really that'll come out and, argue with the umpire really too much.
But I'll say this is not trending well early for Torrey Lovello. Not only were there not expectations on this team, but Gallen on the shelf, Calhoun on the shelf,
mm-hmm.
Clippard on the shelf, Soria on the mm-hmm. shelf. They've played four games.
Uh-huh.
So you heard the prediction from Ken Kendrick. What about a timetable? Burns and Gambo asked him about when will a decision be made on Torrey Lovello's future?
The specifics of a decision, when and in what detail, really is the way that we have tried to operate our team for a number of years, and I have learned over the years about my job, what it is, and now, more important, what it isn't. That's principally Mike Hazen's job, and his timetable and his thinking and his game plan. I'll learn it, when it's developed, and certainly I have a right to sign off on whatever plan, but we have a lot of faith in Mike, and Torrey reports to him, and he'll be the lead decision maker on the details of what we do.
Yeah, it's a little curious, and I'll say this, I'll come out and say it right now. I'm pulling for Torrey Lovello.
Yeah.
I like him as a person. I think he's a good manager.
So
I think he takes pride in his work. I think the odds are, if they're basing a decision on whether or not he comes back with a new contract, I think the conditions that they're under right now are stacked against him. So I would just like to see them nip it in the bud.
Yeah.
Get it taken care of and say, you know, do your best this year. We didn't give you much more to work with. The big acquisition we made last season, we got rid of already. Do your best, and we'll try to get this thing back on the road when things are a little bit more financially normal.
Yeah, like I said, it doesn't. I agree with you. I think Torrey Lovello, there's times when you think maybe a more forceful manager might be the ticket. But I look across Major League Baseball, and there's a lot of morons running baseball teams, and Torrey Lovello is a pretty smart dude.
Well, I mean, you've talked about it in terms of football in the NFL and how Cliff Kingsbury relates to players and how he interacts with players. And the day, I think it's true in baseball. I think it's true in basketball. I think it's true in hockey and most team sports, that hard edged, hard nose, in your face, disciplinarian coach doesn't fly.
Doesn't happen anymore.
No.
Yeah. Nobody wants to be yelled at anymore, Vinny.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so
I come from a family of yellers.
Yeah,
so,
I hear you.
That was an adjustment for me.
Uh-huh.
That's what I was used to. That's how I was conditioned as a kid. I got yelled at a lot. And then I realized as an adult, people really don't like getting yelled at. Yeah. They didn't have the same experience
right,
I had as a kid.
That's right.
You're right. People don't like getting yelled at anymore. Coming up. The NCAA tournament is now in the rearview mirror, and it was not one shining moment last night for the Gonzaga Bulldogs. We'll get into the tournament as a whole and the championship game next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Murata.
Scott Drew's dream comes true. Drew and Baylor complete college basketball's greatest rebound and rebuild with a championship.
Jim Nantz, final call last night on CBS, 16-point win for the Baylor Bears, their first national championship. I thought one of the coolest moments of that broadcast last night late was when they tracked down the video and the audio of Scott Drew taking over that job in 2003 and taking over a program that had really been run through the ringer and did a lot of stuff wrong. There was scandal. They're playing in a good conference. And he talked about, I'm coming here to win NCAA championship games, and I'm coming here to win a championship. And they won 21 games his first 3 years. And it took a long time, but patience showed by the university and a really good basketball team. And what I like about this, Baylor did it without blue chip recruits.
Yeah, you're right about that.
They didn't have one McDonald's All-American on their entire roster.
Wow. You're right about this, and Baylor is a great story when you go back in the Wayback Machine to what Scott Drew has been able to do there. Scott Drew, obviously, brother of Bryce. They're both sons of Homer. They come from a coaching family.
How cool is it that all three of those guys coached Valpo
at one point? Yeah.
Scott Drew only coached him for a year, but still, that's pretty cool.
Right, and I think it's got to make GCU fans even more happy about the basketball coach they have running their program now because they come from a rock-solid family. Baylor basketball in 2003, for people who don't know, they had a basketball coach by the name of Dave Bliss was his name.
Yes.
Is that was his name?
Uh-huh.
They had a teammate murder another teammate.
Yes.
And if that weren't bad enough, Dave Bliss tried to cover it up, so the FBI didn't realize he was paying players. That's how immoral that program was. Fast forward many years later, Art Briles, a disgusting human being, ran that football program into the ground.
Yeah.
Waco, Texas is a very strange place. Some people call it Waco, Texas. What Scott Drew has been able to build there slowly and pulling Baylor out of, there was a time when they were considered the yuckiest athletic program in America.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's saying something. Yeah.
And so here's this guy who is just rock solid, and he put together a team that just destroyed Gonzaga. And it's funny, too, because I was watching more of the NCAA tournament game last night than the Suns. You did just the opposite. So we should have these topics covered very well today. will be a good balance for each other. And I really thought that the broadcast, they went into this game really expecting a Gonzaga coronation, building off of that buzzer beater from Jalen Suggs.
Uh-huh.
This great story about Baylor, they didn't tell it until the very end.
Yeah.
And I'm like, somebody got caught surprised by the direction of this basketball game. But
you're not the first person to say that. You're not the only person I saw with that reaction.
That's what it felt like. Yeah. It just felt like generally at the end of games it gets sideways. Jim Nance and that crew, they're spectacular at backfilling. And I didn't feel it. I felt like it was really like they were just like stuck with a non-competitive basketball game, and the broadcast sounded that way.
Well, even it, right away, like you mentioned, the game was over. It felt like, and 5 minutes
it
in,
did.
And then you spent the rest of the game kind of hoping and waiting for a Gonzaga run, and they never really got closer than, what, like 10 points or something?
They got to within single digits in the second half at one point, but I think it got down to 9, and
yeah.
Then Baylor responded with another run. Here was Scott Drew afterwards.
Coaching is like being a parent, and Christmas time, you see the kids opening up presents, you see them excited, you're excited, and to see the Baylor fans be able to celebrate and cheer, to see the city of Waco be able to celebrate and cheer, to see the state of Texas. I mean, look how much great basketball we have from high school, AAU, junior college, college, and we haven't won a national championship since 66, so it's long overdue for the state. Again, just so pleased for all them. We have an unbelievable administration, Mac Rhodes and President Livingstone, that have given us every resource to be successful. The guys that have sacrificed for 18 years leading up to this, and these guys that were able to take it home. And it was great to see Freddie and Devontae and Tristan in the stands, and we knew last year they really wanted to have a chance to do this, and we weren't going to have any regrets with this tournament. We wanted to leave it all on the court, and really blessed with the effort everyone gave us tonight.
Yeah, here's the stat. I saw this on ESPN Stats and Info. Since seeding began in the NCAA tournament in 1979, this year's Baylor squad is the third team to win the national championship without any McDonald's All-Americans.
Wow.
Joining the 2002 Maryland Terrapins and the 2014 UConn Huskies. In the final four, they trailed for a total of 1 minute and 3 seconds, all in the first
game.
That's
unbelievable.
Now, I think this tournament was good. This was a victory. It was kind of a Band-Aid for the NCAA,
mm-hmm.
Especially after having to cancel during March Madness last year. It was, you know, cathartic for a lot of people to have this done. I think it was a good tournament top to bottom. Saturday night produced an all-timer.
Yeah.
Gonzaga, yes. UCLA was one of the greatest basketball games any of us will ever watch.
Mm-hmm.
The unfortunate part is the other two games of the Final Four were absolute garbage.
Were really bad, yeah. No, that's very, very true. Baylor-Houston was terrible, and the championship game was dreadful as well. The Gonzaga thing, there's a lot of people who said, listen, if people were paying attention to college basketball during the regular season, if you were paying any attention at all to the WCC or wherever Gonzaga plays yeah. out of, then you would know that they were vulnerable, that they are not that great of a team. I mean, they were good,
well,
really good, but
listen to the teams they beat early in the season, Bick. Before
right.
they beat Kansas,
okay,
Auburn, West Virginia, Iowa, Virginia. That was all before they got into conference play, and they were blowing everybody out.
That
and,
is true.
And
okay.
Maybe they didn't get sharpened in their conference the way they should have outside of that conference tournament win
right.
in the championship game over BYU. I think that's something that they'll deal with probably for a while. There's also people asking the question, okay, you're going in undefeated. Nobody's been able to complete that whole run since 76 when Bobby Knight's Indiana Hoosiers did it. Mark Few, the head coach, was asked, hey, was that a disadvantage for your team?
I mean, it's obviously a feeling these guys had never had to address and deal with, but I think the nature of it tonight probably made it, it's not easy, but again, you just as a coach try to give them as much perspective as you can, and as is usually the case with everything, time will lend them the best perspective. But they've just been an amazing, unbelievable group, and I just told them they're just so easy to coach and so easy to travel with and so easy to deal with. All this COVID stuff that we dealt with all year, was amazed at how they handled everything.
Yeah, but Baylor was no slouch either. They were highly ranked all season long. They only lost two games.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know about the undefeated thing being a disadvantage. Maybe you rest on your laurels a little bit, which I think would have been really foolish, even if it was subconscious for Gonzaga to do, because they almost got beat by an 11 seed on Saturday night.
Yeah.
But what a bummer that is to go undefeated all season. The last game you play is the only game you lose. It's awful.
I know, and it's going to be a hard thing because Gonzaga's been waiting for that payoff for 20 years. Basically,
yeah. Since that run started, in that first tournament that they had success, they played here in Phoenix, back at the arena,
and then to have a chance at immortality as well with an unbeaten season, and then to perform like you did and never really be in the game and just kind of give off the look that you were outclassed. That's going to be a tough one to overcome.
Yeah,
that's a hard thing to do for up and coming programs when you don't get that championship. You wonder if it's ever going to show up.
Yeah, they were preseason number one. I'm looking at their weekly roundup of rankings. There's no other number but one on it until the final one comes out later today.
Wow.
That's such a bummer.
That really is.
Here's Corey Kispert, one of the players for Gonzaga, talking about how he sums up the season.
I mean, the word that comes to my mind is grateful. I'm so grateful for, you know, being able to wear this name on my chest, and so grateful to all the people who made this season happen, you know, in Spokane. And I'm grateful to our guys for sticking with it through the very end. A lot of the days weren't easy. There were a lot of really tough ones. But, I mean, I'm looking back, and this has been by far the most special 6 months of my life. And, you know, I'm just so, so thankful that it turned out the way it did, just from top to bottom. I had so much fun. You know, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
It's a pretty healthy attitude to take for just losing.
Yeah, no, it really, really is. It was a real likable team. The Gonzaga team was likable, I thought.
I'm not totally there with you.
No?
No.
Okay.
Not so much last night. That Drew Timmy.
Yeah,
kind of bugs me.
Yeah, he's kind of goofy.
There's a lot of gesticulating and flexing.
Yeah, and like I said yesterday, that flexing has to be ironic because he's got very little muscle definition.
You don't see me walking around flexing.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So maybe I'll amend that a little bit, but it was really kind of thought that Mark Few deserves this, that he deserved to finally break through and win a championship for building what he's built and then for staying put the way he has. He's just going to have to keep grinding. NCAA tournaments are very hard to win. It took Dean Smith forever to get a second one.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good point.
They're hard to win. Yeah. You can have a great team, but that single elimination format playing out over 3 weeks, it's hard to run that table.
Especially with no break in location.
Yeah.
That was another thing people were dealing with this year. But congratulations to Baylor for winning the national championship. Coming up next, Devin Booker has been outstanding recently and certainly last night when the Suns needed him to be.
Outstanding.
Outstanding. Is there 7 players in the NBA under the age of 25 that are better than Devin Booker? One national outlet thinks so. We'll talk about that more next. Bickley Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.